We're back for another Inside the U podcast. Visit InsideTheU.com. Follow us on Twitter at InsideTheU or email the show InsideTheUpodcast@gmail.com. This is Christopher Stock. I'm here with David Lake and Nate Adelson. And guys, just happy holidays. It's a busy time for everyone. But we're going to do this podcast, talk a little bit about the bowl game, give some recruiting updates. Just kind of how are you guys doing?
Doing well, yeah. Holidays is always a nice time to be with family and relax a little bit. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Sun Bowl here, and then kind of immediately after the Sun Bowl, recruiting all-star stuff gets cranked up. So it's going to be a fun time for Miami football fans.
Nate, how are you doing? Things good?
Yeah, everything's good on this end. I mean, I know they say it's the dead period right now, but when you get this late in the game, no time is completely dead. There's always new stuff going on, new names popping up every day, so it's still definitely worth a follow this time, even though coaches are limited as far as what they can do.
Yeah, and before we get into recruiting, because there's still plenty of updates, like you guys kind of mentioned, but David, just with the team stuff, just kind of update from the Sun Bowl with, you know, suspensions and what's kind of going on, and you know, just games coming up on everyone there, and the Sun Bowl would be good for Miami to get the win, kind of close out the season with the win. But what's been kind of going on with the team lately?
Yeah, so Miami's out in El Paso now getting ready for the Sun Bowl against Washington State. And earlier in the week, the team kind of announced first, I guess, Jamal Carter broke some team rules and he was sent home from the Sun Bowl. And then I think the next day it was announced defensive tackle Cortell Jenkins was academically ineligible to participate in the Sun Bowl. So he was also sent home. So, you know, two guys who have, you know, fairly significant roles in the defense. Cortell was pretty much a starter at D tackle. And then Jamal was a very useful kind of reserve guy off the bench who played a lot in the rotation at safety. And really, I mean, Jamal's absence is going to be felt against a team like Washington State that really throws the ball around a lot. You know, they average about 57 passing attempts per game. So, you know, for this type of game, you want as many defensive backs on the field as possible, guys who play a lot, and they're going to be missing Jamal. So that's going to be something to watch.
David, what's the latest with the coaching search? Obviously, Mark Richt is picking up some guys and some names are popping up. What are you kind of hearing with that?
Yeah, so the biggest news to come out with the coaching search stuff was Thomas Brown, his running backs coach at Georgia, who he had only been at Georgia for 1 year, but he's kind of a young, up-and-coming assistant. He played at Georgia under Richt. His name's Thomas Brown. And so the news is that he's going to be joining Richt at Miami. And it's even kind of been rumored that he might get a co-offensive coordinator type title for his job. But really, he'll kind of just focus on running backs and recruiting. He's known as a great recruiter. And, you know, even though he might have the offensive coordinator title, really it's going to be Richt who's going to be the offensive coordinator at Miami. He wants to call plays and be more hands-on. So he's going to be involved with all that, but it's a good sign. I think, you know, Thomas Brown is definitely a young, up-and-coming guy that's well-respected. He definitely does well on the recruiting trail, Nate. And I think one guy to watch now in particular is Texas running back DeVal Whaley, who was committed to Georgia at one point and definitely has a good relationship with Richt and presumably with Thomas Brown. I guess, Nate, what's kind of your feeling on the impact Coach Brown could have at Miami?
Yeah, well, Brown is known as a pretty good recruiter. Like you said, he's a young guy, and it's always easier for recruits to connect with a personality like that, who they feel has something in common with them and can understand the way they view things and their outlook on football. But specifically with Whaley, it was already a big deal when Richt came to Miami because Whaley had such a good connection with him and because Whaley really wasn't looking at Miami before at all. So Richt was really the sole reason that he was looking at Miami because he had been previously committed to Georgia. And it seemed like Richt had a lot to do with his commitment to Georgia because it broke pretty soon after Richt left from Miami. So you can see the connection between Whaley and Richt. And then when you add Brown to the mix, Brown would have been most likely the position coach that Whaley committed to at Georgia. So now that you bring him into the mix at Miami, that's just another factor that working in Miami's favor. So with the combination of Rick and Brown together has to make them a real contender to get Whaley. It'll just come down to how his visit goes in January.
Are there some other new names that have popped up? David, I know you wrote an article there and on the website, kind of new names that have popped up because of Rick. Who are some other names and presumably, you know, just big names that Miami's kind of in the picture with, you know, this closing, you know, 6 weeks or so before signing day?
Yeah, I mean, one guy who kind of emerged in the Louisiana State Championship games was a four-star athlete. He kind of projects more as a corner, Shaheem Carter. He's definitely respected as being one of the top cornerback prospects in the country this year. He's going to be at the Under Armour All-American game, so we'll definitely catch up with him that week. But he kind of just said, you know, hey, now that Coach Rick's at Miami, he contacted me and said to, you know, give them a look. And so he's kind of trying to figure out how to make a visit happen to Miami. And he said, you know, yeah, I'm definitely interested in Miami now that Coach Rick is there. So that's one door that's opened. Another guy, Carlos Becker, who's, you know, Osceola Kissimmee cornerback. He's a three-star guy who's kind of gone under the radar throughout the recruiting process, but he had a strong senior season, and now he's starting to get some bigger name schools after him. And Miami was a school who, after seeing him at the state championship game, said, hey, we want to come after you strong. So Becker, he said he grew up in Miami as a kid. Definitely Miami was his favorite team, he said. And, you know, he plans on taking an unofficial visit to Miami. I'm sure Miami will try and push to get him in on a official visit if that goes well. And so those are two guys off the top of my head that kind of stand out. And really, it seems like cornerback in general is a position that Coach Richt has identified as a position that they need to address right away with this class.
Nate, do you have any, your thoughts on maybe some of those names, or is there anyone else you can kind of think of that's popped up recently?
Yeah, David brought up those two guys, and they're absolutely guys that have come into the picture as Rick has taken the job and were not there before. And the other spot besides cornerback that I've seen the most action at is probably defensive tackle. And this is a position we've talked about in previous podcasts, as, you know, Miami has a lot of work left to do as far as their recruiting class. At defensive tackle, they don't have any commitments right now. And really, the tough thing is a lot of their targets are out-of-state guys and guys that are just far away. And, you know, they're interested in Rick, but it's a little bit of a tougher sell convincing them to come away from wherever their home is in the Midwest or the Southeast or somewhere else to Miami. But Rick has offered a couple new guys in the past week at the position. One of them is Amir Watts. He's a highly recruited defensive tackle out of Chicago. He's got a lot of offers around the Midwest. His recruitment's really taken off during his senior year. He's going to be a guy to watch. The other guy is Marcel Southall. He's out of Duncanville, Texas, which is in the Dallas area. Same thing. He's not quite a national name per se, but he's got a lot of offers, a lot of really solid schools on him. He hasn't taken many visits, so where he goes in January could have a big role in determining where he ends up at the end of the day. So, you know, Rick knows talent needs to be added at defensive tackle. And, you know, none of these guys are locks by any means, but he's trying to get visits out of these guys. That's where you start with an out-of-state prospect, and then you can build from there.
I think going back to Carlos Becker real quick, you know, just seeing him in the state championship game, the interception he made, and David, I know you wrote about it, but just it was an impressive play. It was a deep pass. And, you know, intended for Snelson. It looked like that he was going to catch it. And, you know, the ball hung a little bit, but, you know, Becker comes back there and makes an incredible play. And yeah. It was impressive down the sideline, long corner, you know. And, you know, some of the times with these guys in the rankings, you know, what you like to see is progression, where they are as a player. And like you said, he had a good senior year. So you're hoping that he builds on that for the future. Maybe it's just a late bloomer or whatnot. But you like seeing guys finish strong and, you know, and obviously make big plays in big games.
Who from that weekend, we haven't talked about the state championship weekend, but who in that weekend impressed you, Chris? I know you mentioned Dalvin Cook's little brother, you feel like is definitely a stud. Is there anyone, I mean, talk about him and just kind of, was there anyone else that stood out to you that weekend?
Yeah, and there'll be obviously a lot with him, with James, you know, but just, you know, he's a freshman running back. I think he had close to 180 yards and 3 touchdowns. And everyone was impressed with his ability, and it was impressive. I mean, he was going against a good team, good defense, and he just kept getting the ball and reeling off big plays. And I think the thing that you're looking at, you know, the thing that impressed everyone afterwards was just the way he handled interviews. You know, what they do is they usually interview the star of the game on the big screen on TV, and he handled that fine. No worries about pressure there, and answered questions about Dalvin. And a couple things that stood out was just that someone asked, you know, what are your thoughts on Dalvin not making the Heisman, the finals list there in New York. And he's like, well, he's got to be better. You know, and I thought that was an interesting thing of just, you know, the no excuses mentality. And Dalvin had that too. But just, you know, yeah, instead of saying, oh, he should have been there, he got slighted and all that, he just said, you know, flatly, you know, he's got to be better and things like that. So I thought that was good. And the thing to watch with that is he said he grew up a Miami fan. He certainly roots for Dalvin and all that. But he grew up a UM fan. So just because Dalvin's there doesn't mean he's completely out of the picture. And obviously, being just a freshman, a lot can change. But he was someone.
I know he's younger, and it's, you know, he's got a long way to go. But is he similar to Dalvin, or is he a different style running back?
I would say different. You know, I'm trying to think back when Dalvin was a freshman. You know, we didn't see a ton of him there, but, you know, some as a sophomore. You know, but just the same, I guess the comparison you would just say is the vision and the ability to hit a hole and hit top speed. I think that part is similar. But he's a little bit, I say he's smaller because he's younger, but he is smaller. And Dalvin obviously continued to grow. But I think maybe physically Dalvin was further ahead at this point in their careers with their progression. But, yeah, no, definitely one to watch. And it's really impressive just in general. I know we talk so much about players, but just giving some recognition to what these South Florida teams have been able to do with Miami Central, you know, for the 4 state titles and Booker T, what they've been able to do. I think it's 4 for Central, right? But, yeah, I mean, in St. Thomas Aquinas, all these teams, just these dynasties in their particular classes, it's very impressive what they've been able to do. And then the success at the 8A level, while they haven't had the back-to-back winners with the same team, but South Florida's done really well at the highest level, you know. So with Flanagan winning it this year, you know, South Dade's won it. And, so it's just been impressive what football, what the South Florida teams have been able to do and winning championships. And it wasn't always like this. And it's rare what's going on for one team to dominate a class, let alone three, the way it's been going.
You saw, Sam Bruce, wide receiver commit, play, you know, for St. Thomas Aquinas that weekend. What were your thoughts just on his play in that game? And then also, he, you know, following the game, he had some pretty strong quotes in regards to his recruitment. I guess touch on both of those things, what you thought about Sam.
Well, I think the big thing when we talk about Sam is you evaluate how he was as a senior. I think his yards per catch was right around 10 or a little less than 10, and, which is surprising for a guy that's smaller, a guy that, you know, tries to exploit with his speed and things like that. I think that's a disappointment, to be honest with you, David. I think you'd like to see that number a little higher. But the one thing I saw in the state championship game, they went to him early and often, and he made plays. And I thought that was important. They got him heavily involved early on screen passes mostly. They like to use him in the slot. And then his touchdown was impressive. He caught it around the 5 on a, you know, I want to say it was about 25 yards downfield. Caught it at the 5 and kind of battled the last 5 and just to get the ball over. So I think he was a guy that really set the tone for them. You know, and I think he finished with maybe 6 catches or something like that. But, you know, he was good in the way that he takes on contact. I think the, you know, the overall playmaking ability, I think it's worth questioning, to be honest. I think it's something we've seen more of from similar guys of his stature, from other guys in the past. So I think that'll be something to monitor. But he's a guy, he's just a real sharp guy, and he's one of those guys that it's been very mature coming through that program. It's one of those guys you can trust as a player. He's going to work hard and those kind of things. I think he's going to bring all that to the team. And yeah, I think after the game, you know, a lot of people ask about recruiting. That's what we do after the games. But he was very, very strong about Miami and said, you know, why would I leave? You know, I want to play in front of friends and family. And he was very strong on Miami. And I know we all talk about him possibly leaving, but I guess he didn't show any of those signs that he's wavering based on his comments. Now, he will take visits, and things can always change when visits are being taken, but he said all the right things in terms of his being strong to Miami, and I know that's something he's been vocal about in previous interviews.
Yeah, and Nate, just to recap too from that same weekend, it was Mark Richt's first official visit weekend as the Miami head coach, and it kind of ended the way we figured with two new commitments in Patrick Bethel, defensive end from Vero Beach, and then Zach McLeod recommitting to Miami. What can you take from that weekend? I mean, it was kind of expected, but it was still pretty important to get those two guys back in, right?
Right. Yeah, those guys were top targets for the Miami staff before Rick got there, and then certainly after Rick got there. So the fact that, I mean, yes, like you said, it was somewhat expected. Those were guys Miami had been in a good position with before. But just to close the deal is a good sign. You know, both those guys are guys Miami fans should be excited about. They had, you know, offers from pretty much everybody for in-state kids. And they're both at positions of need. So while, you know, the cards were all on the table to end up like that anyway, I mean, really, the weekend wasn't going to go any better. They came in with three commitments, early enrollees, quarterback Jack Allison, and then linebackers Shaq Quarterman and Michael Pinckney. And you almost figured that they would have no trouble getting McLeod back on board because he has a close bond with Quarterman and with Pinckney. And that happened very quickly. That happened on Friday, not too long after McLeod arrived for his visit. But Bethel was a guy who had things a little closer to the vest throughout the process. You always felt relatively confident because he had taken a lot of unofficial visits to Miami, and he and his father played for Miami in the 80s. So the ties were there, but he had just never said as much as, oh, Miami's my leader or anything to that extent. So secure him just a day or two later after he returned home from the visit really meant, you know, they couldn't have done any better. They five guys came and five guys are going to Miami as early enrollees. So what more could you have asked for?
One thing I want to ask you, both you guys, and kind of going back to what we talked about earlier about some new names popping on the board, how realistic is it for those guys to land at Miami? Can Rick make up enough ground? We see this with other coaching changes that we've dealt with at Miami. You know, how did Randy Shannon end, you know, when he got hired, and same way with Al Golden when he was hired in December. Just with Mark, is it realistic for him to land these guys? How do you guys view it kind of moving forward with this final stretch run with maybe some new names that weren't considered by Miami, or even if Miami showed some interest in some of these guys, but now it's completely changed. Nate, what do you think? And David also, curious what you guys think.
Yeah, well, it is tough. I mean, and it was something I thought about, particularly when MG Academy tight end Isaac Nauta surfaced. But it's a theme that applies to a lot of guys at this stage of the game. And I always say it's very tough for any coach, whether that be Mark Richt or anybody else coming in fresh to a situation like he is. It's a challenge to outwork what they've built with other schools for a year or two and make up for that in 3 to 6 weeks. I mean, it's just hard. It's asking a lot of a kid to jump on board with your school when maybe they know you as a coach, but they don't know the new place you're in. They're just not going to have that same level of familiarity that they have with the other schools that have made it this far with them in the process. So the way I would look at it, pretty much like a bonus, whichever one of these guys Rick can get, especially these highly touted national guys that Miami's just coming on the scene with, it wouldn't necessarily call it a failure if he's not able to close on all these guys, or the majority of these guys. This is a tough ask. Whichever ones he can get, you're thankful that he got them. But it starts with a visit. You gotta get them thinking about it. And you gotta convince them to visit. And then maybe you'll have something to work with. But no visit equals no shot. So the visit is always the first step in landing any of these guys that fit that description.
I would say, you know, anytime when a new coach comes on December, January, kind of the main thing they need to do is keep the current class together as much as possible. So, and I would say Mark Richt has definitely done that. And then, you know, like Nate said, anyone else he can bring on that's highly touted is kind of a bonus. And right now I look at, I would say there's kind of three guys out there who I would circle that, you know, Miami probably does have a pretty good shot at, thanks to Mark Richt being there now. And, you know, I'd start with DeVoy Whaley, the running back from Texas that was committed to Georgia. And, you know, he said, one thing I really like about Coach Richt is his faith. So they have a strong connection over that. I'd look at, Malik Young, who was committed to Georgia. He's from South Florida, so, and now he's strongly considering Miami and is going to visit there in January. And then I'd look at Amon Richards, the wide receiver from Palm Beach County, who was committed to Miami at one point. And, you know, things were definitely fading there. He said he was still considering Miami after he decommitted when Al Golden was fired. But I think Mark Richt being hired definitely piqued his interest again in Miami. So, and I think with Amon, it's going to come down to Miami against Alabama. And, you know, that's going to come down to whether or not he wants to leave home. I kind of look at those three guys, and I think Miami does have a chance with all three of those guys.
You know, just kind of talking about Whaley so much, David, you watch a lot of film. Have you seen much on him, and does he compare? We hate doing comparisons so much, but so if there's not a guy you want to compare him to, but maybe just explain his running style, because, you know, he is, you know, he's a top five running back in the country right now, and what kind of back is he?
He's a physical guy. I mean, he likes to run between the tackles. He's probably about like 6 foot, maybe 205, 210 right now, but he has the frame to definitely get bigger and be a back that's 220 pounds or so. And yeah, he's a guy who likes to run between the tackles. And then if he hits that second level and, there's no one there, he has the speed to house it. So he's definitely the kind of back Miami needs to add. They need a bigger back. And, he's definitely a guy who's good enough to play at Miami, obviously. And he's a guy that Miami could definitely use right away.
Nate, are there some other guys or some topics, kind of things that you like to talk about right now? I mean, it seems like, you know, there's a lot, but, you know, things are definitely going to pick up next month, obviously, when visits start happening. But are in this dead period, is there anything else that's standing out to you right now?
Nothing particular as far as the dead period. There was just a kind of a general thing that I thought was interesting that I wanted to touch on as far as Rick's recruiting style and what to expect moving forward, more so, you know, in the 2017 classes and in the future. It's too late in the game for it to kind of reflect in this class. But one thing I looked at, because it was something that Al Golden took some criticism for before he left, was offering too many guys. I mean, when Golden was fired, I checked the list. There was over 300 offers that Miami had out all over the country. And I checked Georgia's list the day Rick was hired at Miami. And it was like 180 something, if I remember correctly. So that was just a difference that stuck out to me really strongly. And in the sense that, you know, people said, hey, Golden was offering guys that shouldn't really be playing at Miami or shouldn't have that type of opportunity. And it was, you know, there were so many offers all over the place that it was hard to keep up with. Whereas Rick doesn't operate quite the same way. He knows what it's like to have top targets, to target, you know, guys who are at a certain level. So I don't expect the same volume of names to be surfacing as time goes on. Now, in the immediate future, it'll be a lot just because he's coming in late. He has to offer a lot of guys. The more things move forward into the future, Rick has kind of a different recruiting style in that regard compared to how Golden was and compared to what the fans may have been used to over the past couple of years.
I think that's interesting that you point that out. And that has certainly changed, because I remember, you know, just dating back with Larry Coker, and certainly recruiting was different. So maybe you take that with a grain of salt. But it used to be where a Miami offer really meant a lot, and they couldn't just offer everyone. And maybe part of that was because of where they were on a national scale. You can't just go and offer things, but, I think it's going to be interesting to see, and it's interesting you mentioned, because things have certainly changed with UM and just their philosophies and how they recruit and whatnot. But I think, I certainly believe that you should scale it back. Maybe not to the point where it used to be, but yeah, like you said with Rick, I just think it's important to have a concentrated effort on certain guys that you're aiming for, rather than throwing just a big net across the board and see who commits.
Nate, one thing I want to pick your brain on, you know, with a coaching change, anytime that happens, you're going to have guys who decommit on their own, or, you know, the new coach just kind of decides, well, I'm going to go quiet on this commit and, you know, hope he decommits. Is there anyone in this class, 2016 class right now, who you're looking at that might be one of those guys who maybe Coach Rick hasn't contacted yet, or, you know, just isn't showing any interest at this point in?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple guys in that category, and we've had stories on our front page about most, if not all, of these guys in the last week to 10 days. But a couple of them, ironically, are teammates at South Dade High School, running back Juwan Hamilton and then defensive back James Wiggins. Both of them are kind of singing the same tune right now, in the sense that he committed to Miami. They'd like to stay home, but right now they're not sure if Mark Richt wants them to stay home. They're concerned about, hey, I know I had a spot before, but now that Coach Richt is coming in and he's making his own decisions on who he likes and who he doesn't like, he hasn't contacted them to let them know where they stand and if they still have a spot. So because they have to, they're looking at other options and lining up possibilities if they do have to find somewhere else to go. But both of them, I mean, they're local guys. They're pretty big Miami fans. Their first choice would be to stick with Miami as long as they're wanted. But it's understandable they have to look out for themselves too. And if they're not wanted, they have to explore other avenues. So that's what they're doing until they hear more from Mark Richt about what their status is.
And just want to touch on Juwan Hamilton real quick. And not just him personally, just the situation. I mean, he gave a verbal commitment in late November, and the coaching change had already been made, and he's a two-star recruit, and it just didn't make any sense in the fact that, like, who's accepting this commitment when, you know, obviously with the new coach coming in, they're going to have their own decision to make on who sticks and whatnot. So I think that was just a weird situation from the beginning, and obviously it looks like it's playing out the reason why you don't accept a commitment, whoever decided to do that.
Yeah, it's just unfair to the kid. I mean, of course he's going to upgrade his situation from FIU to Miami, but there's no head coach in place. And so it's just unfair to him to commit to a program, and then the new coach comes in and says, you know, I don't think this guy can play at Miami. So then this guy's out of luck, and he's got to scramble in the last month to figure out where he's going to go. So hopefully things can end up okay for Juwan, but it's just a tough situation.
Sure. Go ahead, Nate.
Oh, I wasn't saying anything, but yeah, I mean, you kind of feel bad for Juwan because he gets kind of the dream offer from Miami, and of course he's excited about it, and he gets his heart set on going to Miami, and he even knew it too at the time. He said as much. I was concerned, you know, getting an offer and committing when they didn't have a head coach in place. He knew what is playing out might play out. He even knew that ahead of time. So, yeah, like David said, it's just hard. You feel bad for the kid. He'll land on his feet somewhere, whether it's at Miami or anywhere else. But it's unfortunate. It's just one of the downsides of recruiting, especially under circumstances like Miami was under at the time that this happened.
So the Under Armour All-American game, the week starts next week. And then following week will be the Army All-American. I think fans and everyone involved, media, player, the whole thing, we'll enjoy the fact that it's on back-to-back weeks as opposed to every other year they've done it where it's been during the same week. So there'll be plenty of recruiting information from these top guys. David, with the Under Armour game, I know we'll be there for that week. It's always a good time seeing everybody and seeing how, you know, you hear about guys, particularly outside of Florida, and then you start to see how they are. You know, do they live up to the hype? You know, how do they compete against other top guys? We've seen a ton of big names there over the years, but just your thoughts and maybe some storylines going into that week.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, Under Armour Week is a fun week just because, number one, I like seeing how good these Miami commits really are. And really, Under Armour Week doesn't really lie. If if guys can play, it shows up at Under Armour Week during those practices and during the game. So, you know, I'm going to be watching a guy like quarterback Jack Allison, seeing how he competes in practice and in the game, and how he stacks up against these other top quarterbacks that are there too. So it's going to be fun watching Jack and just kind of measuring how good he is. I think, you know, we've seen in the past multiple years, you know, Miami typically has a guy committed in the game at Under Armour Week. And Chris, we can tell right away whether a guy can play or not. You know, just some guys to name off the top of my head are Kevin Olsen and Preston Dewey. You know, both those guys really didn't have very good showings at Under Armour Week, and it kind of proved to be true during their Miami careers. So I think you can tell a lot by the way a guy can play at Under Armour Week. Jack Allison will be there. Patrick Bethel will be there. Sam Bruce will be there. Deontay Mullins, I'm interested in seeing because he didn't play his senior year. You know, he had some eligibility issues. And so, you know, this is kind of his first chance to play this fall. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he kept in shape and kind of just how he's looking in general. And then, you know, also with Under Armour Week, you get a lot of recruiting juice and scoop and kind of get a feel for where guys are leaning and what they're thinking. And DeVoy Whaley, who we've talked about multiple times already on this podcast, a running back out of Texas, is going to be there. So we'll be able to get a good feel for him. And you know, even a guy like Shaheem Carter, who Miami's trying to make a late run on, the Louisiana corner. And, you know, it'll just be a fun time to kind of be around top players and get a feel for where they're going and then kind of just how good they really are.
I think another thing, you mentioned so much about just their ability as players, and certainly that shows up. But another thing that I like, you know, with the week is also seeing their personalities. You know, sometimes when you get these all-star games, while they might have been a big deal in their region or their school and those kind of things, when it comes to the, you know, going against and playing with other big names, like how do you stack up? And I think it's always important. And you kind of see the guys that kind of can handle it. You know, you see the personalities kind of shine that can rise above other all-stars. I think that's something that we've always seen too. And also not just the personalities of themselves, but who kind of guys hang out with, you know, and are they loners? You know, how do they fit in? And do they develop relationships? And we see this all the time. Like, you know, you see guys get to know each other during that week because they spend so much time together with practices and hanging out with activities or hanging out playing video games. But bonds are formed that week. And then they're like, you know, if a guy's committed to another school, an example could be like, hey, you should come take an official visit here. And then you never know how that's going to work out. So I think that's something to watch too. And also you mentioned the recruiting scoop just with the players, but also, you know, it's an opportunity for us to talk to other people that cover recruiting, you know, and we kind of have our knowledge that we've gathered over the years, and then we kind of compare stuff and other people that we're friends with and we talk with, that they're able to share things as well. So you kind of get a different perspective scoop wise, and I think that's always a good time as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a useful week. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's almost kind of like, it's interesting because everything in recruiting has been happening for almost a year now, but really, in a lot of ways, once this week, these all-star game weeks happen, you can almost hit the reset button on recruiting, and a lot of stuff just changes, whether that's, you know, coaching changes will have a domino effect during those 2 weeks. I mean, you know, a lot of the bowl games will be over next week, and that's when coaching changes will happen. So, I mean, Miami will probably have a totally new-looking staff, you know, during that week, and that'll affect a lot of these guys. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Nate, are there some guys in particular that you think that'll be worth paying attention to other than the names we mentioned for the Under Armour Week? Is there any other names that you're curious about or hearing about that Miami fans should be interested in?
One guy I'm curious about, especially because he's at a position of need and he's just a guy that is a really interesting story, is DeAndre Christmas Giles. He's a defensive tackle out of New Orleans. He goes to the same high school that Leonard Fournette went to, and as well as Tyrann Mathieu, if I remember correctly. So it's a school that has produced some big time talents. But Christmas Giles is just, his path to being a big recruit is not your typical one. He didn't play football as a junior because he had to sit out due to transfer rules. So his recruitment kind of flew under the radar. And now he played his senior year. He was pretty dominant. I'm kind of surprised he's not in one of the national all-star games because he's absolutely exploded on the scene. Now he has offers from everybody, including Miami. There's a possibility he takes a visit in January. He had committed to Tennessee early on, but he decommitted from them within the past week or two. But the amount of offers that he was picking up during his senior season was pretty impressive. I mean, I'm talking, there was a stretch where he had in 2 weeks, he picked up 10 BCS offers. It was almost another one every day. And Miami was among that rush. And there were some other really big schools in there. And he's taken some official visits to Texas and TCU, if I remember correctly. But a guy like that, if Miami is able to make progress with him, that's almost an instant solution to some of their defensive tackle needs that everybody's wondering about. If you get a guy like that, that would be worth celebrating for sure.
Yeah, so there's obviously a lot of storylines, and we'll do another podcast, recapping Under Armour Week and continue to provide updates, and obviously check the site at InsideTheU.com. Again, thanks for all your support, and guys, it was good talking to you. Happy holidays, and happy holidays to everyone that's listening, and again, thanks for your support. We'll talk to you guys later.
Happy holidays. It was fun.
Same thing here. See you guys later.